Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning is United States against Fernando King, 09-1974.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mary Meehan, and I was appointed to represent the appellant in this case, Fernando King. The defendant was charged with attempted possession with intent to distribute 500 grams or more of cocaine and with conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute a controlled substance in excess of 5 kilograms. The jury trial began July 14, 2008. Mr. King was found guilty on both counts July 22, 2008. On April 3, 2009, the defendant was sentenced to 240 months on the conspiracy count and 120 months on the possession count to run concurrently. There are six issues before the court today on appeal, and I don't believe I will have time to address all of the issues, so I intend on only addressing some of the issues unless the court directs me otherwise. I'd like to start with the first issue, and that is Argument 1, Motion to Suppress.
Can I ask a question of clarification about that? I didn't see in your brief any particular focus on the actual original unlawful entry argument, whether the moment at which the police follow the cook into the restaurant is itself an independent violation.
There wasn't much at trial on the actual entry.
So isn't that point forfeited then?
I don't believe the point is forfeited because the defendant, he did not fail to raise the issue. In fact, he filed a pretrial motion and a memorandum in support of his motion where he specifically included the argument that the ATF entered without consent. He further elicited testimony to that effect during the testimony of Agent Zytek, who was the main agent on the scene at the initial entry. He was eliciting testimony about the entry and about whether the business was closed at that time when the judge specifically stated in document 159, page 22, and I did not put this line in my brief, but the judge did specifically state that the business wasn't yet open to the public. When defense counsel was asking, was the business open to the public, the judge states, there's no dispute that the place was not open to the public, Mr. Lopez. Let's move on.
Right. But I guess what I'm concerned about is whether the judge or anybody else knew that the focus was on the entry as opposed to the consent to search, because it all gets blurred together. His motion, as I found it, says special agents of the ATF entered the restaurant without defendant's consent or search warrant. Well, that's a statement of fact, but it really doesn't develop any kind of argument.
Well, this court does not demand that the defendant's argument be a model of trial advocacy. He elicited testimony.
Standards.
Elicited testimony about whether or not the business was closed, whether or not they entered without consent. And the judge, in fact,
that there's a bind. Is it your position that if the business is formally closed to the public, even if it's occupied by somebody with authority to be in it, as the cook was, Mr. Cabrera, that it's automatically wrong for the police to come in? Suppose it had been Mr. King in there.
It's my position that it's a Fourth Amendment violation to enter into a closed business. Officers do have the right to enter into a business that's open to the public, just as any other member of the public would, but this business was closed to the public.
It's not really closed, though, when the cook shows up and opens it up and walks in, right?
It is closed.
He didn't turn back and lock the door. The door's open as they came in. Or the door's unlocked.
We don't know if he would have. We don't know if that's what he usually would do. He testified that the business opened at 11:10. It's a taco stand, basically. I don't see a taco stand being open at 9:45 in the morning for tacos when there's no food made. The cook is just getting in.
Well, that's the problem with it not being explored further at the district court level, because had it been explored, the point you just made might have been elicited, whether Mr. Cabrera's ordinary practice was to lock the door behind him or not. I mean, the police just kind of come in with him. He doesn't say anything. They don't say anything. They might have thought there was implicit consent even for that.
Well, the judge knew that the business was not open to the public.
But maybe this is getting over into another point that's relevant to Mr. Cabrera's more general consent. If Mr. Cabrera had said to the police officers, let's get putting the language issue to one side, if he had said to the police officers, it's fine with me for you to come on in for a minute, then he would have been consenting to their initial entry.
Well, he didn't speak English.
I know. Oh. I'm well aware of that. I said, let's put the language issue to one side. If a person in his position said, it's fine with me for you to come in for a minute, wouldn't that be consent, and weren't his actions more or less the same?
No, his actions were not the same. They followed him in on his heels. An alarm went off when he opened the restaurant. They followed him in. The agent testified that he asked, may I turn off the alarm? May I?
An alarm went off. It's just the alarm code. He had the code to disarm it. When you walk in, the alarm triggers and disarm it. That's what happened.
Right, and the officers went into the back with him and turned off the alarm. There was no discussion about whether we could come in, whether are you opened right now? May we enter? They just followed the cook in, and the cook proceeded to turn off the alarm because that seemed like the immediate thing to do.
Sure.
But just so I'm clear on that, that alarm goes off every time you open the door.
I don't know. If it's set, I assume, yes.
Yeah, and you open the door, the alarm goes off, and then you disarm it. He had the code to disarm it.
Yes.
Correct. So it wasn't the alarm going off wasn't a big deal here. It goes off whenever you open the door if the alarm is set.
I wouldn't say it was a big deal, but if there was going to be conversation, maybe the alarm going off, the cook walked to turn off the alarm. The officer testified that he did not refuse his entry. We all entered together.
And I think maybe that's the key thing. There was no refusal. But let me jump ahead again to a point that may be common to this. Given that he had the key, given that he had the alarm code, why is this not a perfectly appropriate case for the district court to find that Mr. Cabrera had apparent authority to consent both to the entry and then to the rather limited search that the officers undertook? Because they don't get his consent until the Spanish-speaking officer shows up.
Well, so you're assuming that if he allowed them into the restaurant?
Yeah, I'm just trying to give you a chance to argue a few more of your points. And the apparent authority argument is one that I think is a substantial one that you should address.
Key to consent is actual or apparent authority over the area to be searched. And the district court clearly erred by finding that Cabrera did have apparent authority because he had keys in the access code. This court has held that no inference of authority should be drawn merely because an employee has keys. The access code
is really important to me, though. I would think that that's really evidence that somebody has apparent authority to allow somebody else to come in. If he came in with his brother or something, came in with him, or somebody came to the door and said, you know, what time are you guys going to be open and wanted to come in or something.
Well, we don't know that.
If you have that code, I mean, there are a very limited number of people that would have had that code to turn that, to disarm that alarm. And I would think somebody who had that code, access to that code, and was given by the defendant, has apparent authority.
The police officers, the officers and agents at the scene did nothing to inquire whether or not he had authority or not. They asked him no questions about his duties. He told them he was the cook and that's it.
But why do they have to do all of that if they can see plainly that he has the code? He's just disarmed the alarm. Does the record show how many employees were typically at this taqueria?
No, the restaurant does not show how many employees were typically at the taqueria. He testified that his duty was to cook.
So he's the cook, and maybe there's somebody who stands at the counter. In other words, a fairly small establishment, it seems.
It's a very small establishment. Three officers entered with the cook. When the Spanish-speaking officer arrived, another two officers came.
Right. No, I understand that.
There's a police dog in the tiny area. No one asked him about his duties there, what he was doing.
They don't have to go through all of that if it's fairly obvious that he is the person in charge. He's got all the inventory in his control during these hours when he's there alone in the establishment, cooking, preparing for the day's business. And isn't this a factual question in any event? The district court finds that, taken as a whole, a reasonable officer would think he had apparent authority. It's not a finding of actual authority.
Well, the government has the burden of proving that third-party consent was joint access or control for most purposes. And the government, the officers also need to assess the surrounding circumstances and inquire what his duties were and whether
That's
or not...
What's your position on the standard of review for that question?
Standard of review for that question is clear error, where there is a finding of fact.
So, and the district court looks at this constellation of facts and thinks that there is, in fact, apparent authority.
Even if there was apparent authority, the cook didn't consent. By all accounts, the cook, when asked for consent to search the restaurant, by all accounts, he pointed to the wall saying that he was not the owner. When he testified, he specifically stated, "I did not give permission."
Weren't there some contradictions in his testimony?
There were contradictions on direct exam. There were two searches going on. His van was also searched, and there was confusion on direct exam, on cross exam. So on redirect, the counsel did ask him to clarify if he gave permission to anyone to search the restaurant. He clearly stated with the interpreter, "No, I did not give permission." The government goes into the argument that because he was not the owner, really has no effect. But our argument is merely that he gave a negative response to whether or not they consent by saying, "I'm not the owner. I can't give you consent. I'm not consenting." Furthermore, he did not sign the consent form. The government says, well, he didn't sign the consent form because it was written in English. He didn't sign the consent form because he didn't give consent.
Well, we don't know that. I mean, he doesn't. Apparently, he's not really too literate. But let me step back from this discussion and ask you what difference all of this makes. They do find the fake kilo or the kilo of sham cocaine, but that doesn't figure too importantly, does it, in the evidence that the government presented against Mr. King? I mean, what if he'd won the suppression?
Well, because if the drugs were never entered into evidence, without the admission of the kilogram of cocaine, counsel would not have stipulated to the contents of the package and the amount, which is the basis for the indictment.
So you would have had testimony from Mr. Guajardo about the whole thing, and you would have had all these tapes. I mean, there would have been evidence that may not be quite as punchy as the actual kilo of the sham cocaine.
There was a video of,
right, there was
of
a video,
the handover.
But right. The actual tendering of the package isn't clear. You can't tell what it is. It was wrapped up immediately.
But there would have been testimony about that, which a jury could have credited if it wanted to.
Possibly. There would have been testimony, but there would not have been an amount. There would have been no stipulation to the amount of drugs. That would have never been proven, or that it was, in fact, what it was purported to
phony
be.
Cocaine. I'm not sure I understand you, though, when you say there wouldn't have been a stipulation. Okay, no stipulation. But Mr. Guajardo was prepared to say it was a kilo of sham cocaine, I thought. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, please.
I'm sure he would have testified to that effect, but there would have been no admitting the actual sham cocaine into evidence. There would have been no way to find out the amount of the cocaine.
But you would agree, wouldn't you, that it's, I mean, did it make a difference? Maybe, but on a harmless error approach, there was a lot of other evidence in this case, apart from this kilo of sham cocaine.
There is a lot of evidence in this case, but there were also a lot of mistakes made at the trial level.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about this conspiracy count. What's your view of what was the conspiracy your client was defending against?
We addressed the conspiracy count in the sufficiency of evidence argument and in the gang evidence argument and the bad acts argument. In particular, in the sufficiency.
What is the conspiracy?
The conspiracy was that the government, that the informants would be dealing drugs, and the gang, Mr. King, who's the leader in the gang, would be affording this protection if anyone didn't pay up on some of the drug deals.
Well, the informant couldn't be a conspirator.
The informant's not a conspirator. The conspirator exists within the gang. The government's alleging that Mr. King and Mr. Zambrano, another gang member, are in conspiracy together. But there's really no evidence that Mr. Zambrano himself agreed and has any knowledge of the actual conspiracy. That's in our sufficiency of evidence argument. There's no meeting of the minds between King and Zambrano, and the government presents a lot of evidence that they're members of a gang, that they're bad people, that they commit crimes, that however, there's no real evidence that Zambrano knew what was going on at all.
But King did say on tape that he had to talk to, but he used the word Carnell, and that means Zambrano. He had to talk to him before the deal would be
Agreed
to, didn't he?
So. Yes, he does, and that's their evidence, basically, that King said, I'll talk to the Viejo, and the informant takes that to mean that he's going to talk to Zambrano. King says, I'll get back to the Carnell, and I'll talk to the Carnell, who, again, the informant says that that means Zambrano, and get back to you. And then he says at one point, we'll take one off the top. We want the money up front. But what actually transpired between King and Carnell, there's no evidence of that. Maybe, you know, who knows what it could be. The Carnell could know maybe that they're giving him protection for something else, or that King's doing some business with him and he's asking permission. I have no idea, but there's no evidence that there was a meeting of the mind that Zambrano really knows everything. The government points
Zambrano
to
was at the restaurant, or at Paisano's, I guess, wasn't
Zambrano he? Was present a few times while the informant was talking to King.
And at the taqueria also, right?
Yes, Zambrano was present when the drugs were tendered. But there's no evidence, again, that he even saw what was going on. He was just present, and his mere presence doesn't mean he's a member of the conspiracy.
And Zambrano had a financial interest in the taqueria, didn't he?
Excuse me?
Zambrano had a financial interest in the taqueria?
Yes, Zambrano and King were partners in the taco business. The day that the informant tendered the drugs, Zambrano's there, he's up front. There's some small talk, hi, how are you? And the informant goes into the back of the restaurant. In my brief, I say that they did the transaction outside in the alley. They went into the alley, but they actually stepped back into the back door. When I reviewed the tapes, they're inside the restaurant, but at the back door. There's no evidence that Zambrano sees what's going on. More importantly, knows what's going on, knows that this other deal is going on. The government points to a brief interchange between Zambrano and the informant. I think it's when the informant's leaving, about biggies, because part of the government's theory is that King and Zambrano also have this deal going with biggies. But there's no evidence that there's a protection plan in place with biggies for distributing drugs and trafficking drugs.
Okay, I'm just going to point out you're in your rebuttal time if you want to save anything for that. It's up to you.
Thank you. I will.
Okay, sure. Mr. Porter?
Your Honors, thank you and good morning.
Reporter, I wonder if you could start where Ms. Meehan left off, because obviously to prove a conspiracy, you've got to prove that there's an agreement between two people, and they each have some understanding what the scope of that agreement is. And your evidence is actually quite indirect, that Zambrano was in an agreement with Mr. King to provide protection for Guajardo's sales. And if you think it's a different conspiracy, you can tell me what you think it was.
No, I think that Your Honors understand the government's theory, and I think Ms. Meehan actually presented it fairly accurately, that the government's theory of the case was that Mr. King and Mr. Zambrano, who were very high-ranking members of this street gang, were providing insurance. Were providing insurance for drug traffickers.
Particularly for Mr. Guajardo?
And in that sequence, in the fall and early winter of 2006, entered into an agreement with Mr. Guajardo to provide him that insurance. And, of course, it's quite right that Mr. Guajardo is not a member of that conspiracy because he's a government actor.
Of course. So what evidence do we have other than Mr. King repeatedly saying, I'm going to talk to El Viejo and all the other names he uses for Mr. Zambrano, and the fact that Zambrano happens to be there at the restaurant? I mean, this all sounds very unilateral from King's point of view, and I'm wondering if you have any evidence that shows that Zambrano is signing on to this idea.
Well, the evidence, is indirect, and when we consider the standard of review, certainly those are arguments that can and were made to the jury, but in terms of whether a rational jury could so find, clearly they could.
But
there
were
from what? From
not
what?
Clearly.
They've got to infer it, but from what?
They could infer it from the conversations and the statements that Mr. King made to...
Those are unilateral from Mr. King. Suppose Mr. King is just full of hot air, and he's trying to be impressive to Guajardo. You know, I am so close to the, whatever they call them, the Corona, that, you know, I'm going to go talk to him. But in fact, it's all just so much puffery.
There is that evidence. There's the testimony of Mr. Guajardo, who provides evidence of the relationship between Mr. Zambrano and Mr. King as they are members of this gang. There is the giving of the kilo in the presence of Mr. Zambrano.
What do you mean in the presence? I know he's there.
He is.
What did you show in the record that he observed that he was looking in that direction, that was in his attention?
He is not part of the conversation. As the recording shows, it's a walk up restaurant. There's sort of an and this is all on the record from the recording.
Zambrano's not in the video as the
he is not
handover is
he is not he is in a state he gets picked up, if you will, on the video. At a sink, which, if you're going from front to back of the restaurant, there's a counter in the front. You walk back, there's a grill on the left side. A few feet back from that, on the right side of the wall, is a sink. On the left side of the wall, at the back where the back door is, there's a refrigerator, and above that is some heating and cooling ducts that are visible.
And that's where
that's where he sticks the sham kilo. He puts it in a towel, puts it up, and then there's the back door where he comes in. And
he is not Zambrano, though. He means
Mr. King, absolutely, absolutely. And what the video shows is Mr. Guajardo there as the, I'm sorry, Mr. Zambrano there as Mr. Guajardo walks past, meets with Mr. King, has the conversation with Mr. King, and then turns back and has a conversation with Mr. Zambrano, in which they discuss whether he had reached out to Biggie's and had talked to Biggie's, and there was testimony about Biggie's being Danny Aguilar, another Latin King drug trafficker, and there was conversation about Biggie's and Danny Aguilar. He was referred to as Biggie's. He's Danny Aguilar. About a week before, in which, again, Mr. King discusses how they were providing insurance to Biggie's and were providing this insurance for his drug traffic.
Now, is your theory there's an interrelationship between the Biggie's arrangement and Guajardo's? Is that what your theory is?
The theory is that Mr. King and Mr. Zambrano were providing this drug trafficking insurance for Latin King drug traffickers who wished to sign up for it. And they had that plan in place.
So did it matter to Guajardo that there was an arrangement with Biggie's?
It did in this sense, and there was some testimony about that in the record. Mr. Guajardo, while he was cooperating with the government, had entered into a 2-kilo cocaine transaction with Mr. Aguilar. With Biggie's earlier that year. He began cooperating in approximately February of 2006 until December of 2006. The next day, many people get arrested. He had paid for the first kilo of cocaine, and again, this is in the record. Mr. Guajardo discusses this both in his direct and cross-examination. And he's got another kilo. He's got to pay for the other kilo. And so,
let me just interrupt you and ask whether you are in kind of a long way saying that the evidence that Zambrano and King were collectively providing protection for Biggies was actually better than your evidence that they were providing that same kind of protection for Guajardo.
I don't know that I'd care. I wouldn't characterize it as better. I think the evidence in terms of the conspiratorial relationship that they agreed to provide for Mr. Guajardo was solid, and a reasonable and rational jury could so find. I think there was evidence, though, and it in terms of sort of the indirect or direct evidence that Your Honor was referring to a few minutes ago, there is this conversation about Biggies. Clearly, I believe on November 25th, but there's some conversation between Mr. King, it's either the 21st or the 25th, between Mr. King and Mr. Guajardo about this arrangement that they have with Biggies. And then on the day on December 4th, where Mr. Zambrano is present and there's the conversation about the call, and then Mr. Guajardo is talking to Mr. King on the recording and explains to the jury that what he's talking about there is he's trying to get a hold of Mr. Aguilar because he doesn't want to get taxed. Right. He doesn't want to pay extra.
It's a little late in his payment, right?
He was actually very late in his payment, and the point he's trying to make is, you know, I've been trying to reach him, so don't fine me or charge me interest or whatever, because I've been making efforts to do that. So that is there, but the best evidence is the recordings specifically between Mr. King and Mr. Guajardo. The government certainly acknowledges that. But what's important is...
So what you need, actually, is you need those recordings, which are all very one-sided, and then all this voluminous gang evidence that you introduced in this trial from the Constitution and the bylaws, prayer books, manifesto, you know, all kinds of stuff. You know, the Crown Town tape, listening to people being beaten. There was a lot of gang evidence, and it seems to me there's a huge risk of guilt by association on that. The jury might have just been repulsed looking at it all.
There was absolutely significant gang evidence. And
why was that all necessary? If all you really needed to do was show that when King said, I'm going to talk to Zambrano, that was as good as saying that it had happened.
That evidence and it helped to explain the relationship, and it helped to explain that when Mr. King says I need to talk to the Viejo, the Constitution illustrates that there are these different ranks, that there is this Corona who is the very highest ranking member of the Latin Kings.
But wasn't the defense counsel willing to stipulate to certain things that would have kept a lot of this? I mean, to say that you had a point you needed to prove isn't necessarily to say that you had to prove it with this much evidence.
Well, that point was raised.
Why did you need photos of members making gang signs?
Because although much of that evidence, some of that evidence actually was excluded, as I recall. We had a pretrial ruling concerning how that was going to come in. I frankly don't recall whether we actually elicited even that testimony from the agent who recovered that evidence. But the Constitution and the manifesto, those are the rules of this organization, and they illustrate how And they corroborate.
Of course, don't those rules essentially prohibit drug dealing by Latin Kings? Or it says, not prohibit it, but it says if you're drug dealing, you're on your own. That's not part of the Latin Kings. So it
actually,
kind of contradicts the arrangement that you say they had.
What they prohibit is they prohibit the sale and use of certain drugs, including heroin, and I believe LSD and some other drugs.
They prohibit indebtedness among Latin Kings, don't they?
And that's really the second point in terms of the rules that supports this arrangement. That they do, yes, they forbid. And I don't have it clearly in terms of how it's framed in the Constitution, but they prohibit one Latin king from incurring debts that they can't pay to another. And so again, the point was that supports this insurance arrangement because it's part of the rules of this organization.
Actually, it seems to contradict it to me that this arrangement that King is making is quite different than what the Latin King doctrine would allow.
Well, the Latin King doctrine.
So it makes me wonder why all this Latin King evidence is coming in.
I actually think it's the other way. I think that those rules further and can be used by Mr. King and by Mr. Zimbrano to support these insurance payments. Hey, Mr. Porter, fellow Latin King, you owe Mr. Guajardo this money. You know that there is this rule that says you can't incur a debt you can't pay. You need to pay him. This is just part of our rules. And so that rule, in my judgment, supports the conspiracy evidence and the conspiracy theory that we were putting forward to the jury.
Well, how did these violations support it? They had nothing to do with drug debts. They were collateral matters related to one was insult, I guess, to Zambrano's wife or girlfriend spilling a beer on her, and the other was an indebtedness on a loan related to a bar or restaurant, wasn't it?
The core violation concerned an incident at a bar. Yes, and the way that evidence came in under a 403 analysis was that it corroborated Mr. Guajardo's testimony that the defendant was a high-ranking member of the Latin Kings. Number one, and in fact, there was some discussion between Mr. King and the other Latin King who had violated the rule. I'm a high-ranking officer. I'm a higher-ranking officer. It established or it corroborated the testimony that he would enforce the rules as he understood them to be, and so that again from the argument and our view of the evidence established that he would enforce this insurance arrangement, and this wasn't just something that he was talking about and taking Mr. Guajardo's money without actually enforcing that insurance. And so from a 403 perspective, we talked through all these issues with Judge Kaur, and they were litigated, and we do not believe Judge Kaur abused his discretion in letting that evidence in. There was a lot of evidence that he did not allow in. The June 1st meeting, which is sort of a follow-up to the May 28th incident at the bar, I think 3 of the 20 pages of transcript came in, the rest came out. He struck other evidence in another meeting later in November, and so he let in a lot of evidence about gang membership, but it was key and essential to this entire case because it was this organization that was providing this insurance, and it established the relationship between Guajardo and Mr. King. It established lots of what was being said so that the jurors could understand it.
Biggie and Laux were not conspirators. Is that your position?
The, No, the government's position is that Biggie, as an individual who was paying for insurance, and Lokes, who was also paying for insurance, and there was testimony that they were Latin King drug traffickers as well, that they were also members of the conspiracy. They were beneficiaries of this insurance.
They were members of the conspiracy or customers of the conspiracy? If it's a King Zambrano conspiracy to sell insurance, if you will, then why don't they look more like buyers from the conspiracy?
Right. What's the interdependence between those two, or interdependence with Guajardo?
They don't have an inter. You're right. They do not have an interdependence with Mr. Guajardo. They were beneficiaries of the insurance that was provided by Mr. King and by Mr. Zambrano.
Before you sit down, I want to go back to the entry into the taqueria. Is it your position that the government officers, police, don't need a warrant to enter a closed business? Even if somebody happens, you need a warrant to enter a house, even if there are people inside. And so the mere fact that the cook happens to be inside the business while it's closed doesn't mean that the business isn't closed to the public. Most businesses have their staff show up a little bit before opening time to get ready for business.
Well, Judge, if a business is closed,
as the taqueria was, you agree with that?
It's one of the problems with why we believe this argument was waived, because there wasn't sufficient development of the record. For instance, one of the questions that could have been posed, if this really was an issue and an issue that the defendant had raised, and he didn't, and the judge, always viewed this in the context of, was there actual or apparent authority, and did he consent? If a customer walked in, doors are unlocked, the cook is getting about his business, and if a customer walks in,
the cook says, "We open at 11. Come back and get your taco then."
Cook absolutely did testify to that he considered the restaurant open at 11. If a customer walks in, though, and we don't know the answer to this question because it wasn't developed, if a customer walks in at 9:45 or 10 and says, my business is having an outing later today. We wanted 100 tacos. Can we make that arrangement? Or I'd like to order a taco. I got up at 5 this morning to work construction, and this is my break. Can you make a taco for me? It's not clear to me this record is silent as to how this individual who had, who was the only one there, would have.
Silent. He says that they don't sell until 11, and he's the cook, which he repeatedly says.
He does repeatedly say that.
He's not the guy who takes orders. He's not the guy who, for all we know, he's not the guy who handles the money. There could have been a different lock on any kind of cash register or box.
Well, there actually was testimony in terms of how many employees there were, and he said that it was him, it was Mr. Zambrano, it was Mr. King, and occasionally there was a man named Mario who was there, and there wasn't further identification really of what he did or how often he worked. And so, again, it points up the fact that that part of this record wasn't developed, and it wasn't developed because this wasn't an issue until we were before Your Honors. And so that's why we believe that argument was waived. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, we would ask that you affirm the district court in all respects. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything further, Ms. Meehan? And she has how much time? 2 minutes.
The first issue I would like to bring up is this. This talk about the rules that got into evidence and how the
gangs rules, you mean?
Yes, the gangs rules stated that there should be no incurring of debts, and that was King's job was to enforce the rules. I don't know how that supports a conspiracy theory if it's already in the rules that you can't incur debt and you're breaking the rules of the gang, then why would you need a deal to support debt to protect against someone causing you to have debt or something like that? So also
Didn't Guajardo testify at one point that he thought the protection was he was going to rip off his suppliers, he wasn't going to pay them, and he wanted to be protected from not being killed by them? Doesn't he say that at one point?
Yes, he does say that at one point. He talks about that. The government says that they needed all this gang evidence to support the interrelationship between the people, that King could give orders and that they would follow his orders. However, as the court noted, those beatings that got in were because someone threw a beer bottle at someone. There's no evidence that there's a conspiracy going on to distribute drugs and to offer protection. I don't see why the government feels the need that they had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he could give orders and have gang members listen to his orders. They definitely provided a plethora of evidence to display King as the leader of the second in command in the entire nation of the Latin Kings. I don't see why they would have to get in a possible illegal business that he had providing fake documentation to illegal aliens. That seems to me extremely prejudicial, has no relevance whatsoever. It's so inflammatory that you might as well have said he was building a mosque next to Ground Zero, basically.
Just to take a random example.
Well, how inflammatory that probably was to the jury. The jury's the prejudice to the jury was exemplified in the jury note. I have nothing further. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And you were appointed by the court, and we appreciate very much your efforts on behalf of your client. Thank you so much. Thank you as well to the government.